Current State on 90.5 WKAR. The healthcare industry in America is a multi-billion dollar behemoth. It's a high-stakes arena where the quest for newer and better pharmaceuticals collides with government regulation and a relentless profit motive. But what's sometimes lost in the dialogue is the messaging aimed at helping the patient take charge of their own health. It's Dr. Glenn Nowak's job to convey that message. He's director of the Grady College Center for Health and Risk Communication at the University of Georgia. He was also director of media relations at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Glenn's now a senior communications consultant for the Task Force for Global Health. Dr. Nowak is speaking about health risk communication tonight here at Michigan State University as part of the College of Communication Arts and Science Brandt Lecture Series. Dr. Nowak, welcome to Michigan. Welcome to Current State.
Thank you.
Talk to us a little bit more about health risk communication. What forms would our listeners recognize as health risk communication?
Well, it comes across in a number of different ways. It's everything from the conversations you have with your physician or your healthcare provider, how they talk to you, what they talk to you about, to efforts by government agencies to educate people about things like HIV prevention, educate people about getting an influenza vaccination, to efforts by commercial companies trying to get you interested in their products, whether they're over-the-counter drugs or whether they're prescription drugs.
It's anybody who watches one of the network newscasts in the evening, I think, predictably gets an awful lot of TV. So TV advertising is included in what
Yes.
you would call health risk communication. And how is this landscape changing?
Well, there's a lot more people trying to persuade consumers, trying to reach the public with information and advice related to health. There's a lot more people doing it through public channels like advertising and the internet. Consumers are bombarded with a lot of different places and trying to make sense of it all, trying to figure out who's trustworthy, who's credible, what advice should I take, what I should listen to is really, really difficult sometimes. And a lot of these companies and a lot of these agencies are putting the emphasis on the benefits side. They're telling you about the benefits and probably not telling you so much about the potential risks.
How has the internet changed this landscape?
Well, the internet has made it possible for a lot more people to put a lot more information out there. It's made it more difficult for consumers to judge information. So now you've got information that maybe 15, 20 years ago would have been much more difficult to find, that you can now do a search and bring up lots of information. There's a lot more competing and conflicting information. If you go back 15, 20 years ago, you probably had the advice of your healthcare provider and you probably trusted it and took it. Now when your provider gives you some advice, you probably go home and search the internet to see, are there other things that the provider hasn't mentioned or are there other points of view that weren't brought up in that conversation?
Do employees, do pharmaceutical companies have conversations with you about this topic?
When I was at CDC, I spent about 7 years as director of communications for the National Immunization Program, and so I was involved at that time with a lot of immunization-related communications. And pharmaceutical companies were always interested in what the CDC was going to be saying about vaccines. They wanted to make sure that we were helping promote vaccine recommendations. And so in that instance, they weren't telling us what to say, but they were interested in what we were saying because it affected them and it affected their communications.
Is there enough skepticism on the part of the public toward health risk communications?
I think we
healthy.
Just,
let's qualify that as healthy skepticism.
I think you see healthy skepticism, and I think you also see misplaced skepticism, and then there are probably areas where you could use more skepticism, and so it's fascinating to look at when you see things like with vaccines. There's probably maybe the proper amount of skepticism, and maybe some people have a little bit too much skepticism. When it comes to vitamins and supplements, you probably have not enough skepticism. And then when it comes to some of the over-the-counter drugs, you probably, again, not enough skepticism, a lot of acceptance. When a company tells you that their drugs will help you cure flu symptoms, I think a lot of people would like to think that that's true, and they're probably not going to be as skeptical as they may otherwise be.
When you were at the CDC, what was a particular challenge that you encountered, or something newsworthy while you're during your tenure there that kind of captures why you do what you do?
Well, I was the director of media relations when we had the influenza pandemic. And so I was on the front lines of trying to develop the messaging to guide people about this new form of, or this new flu virus, and what it could mean. And that was a tremendous challenge. And we spent, I think we did press conferences every single day for about 2 months to try to stay on top of that and to answer the public and media questions about how much should we be concerned about this new virus, what's happening in terms of being able to prevent it, what are the recommendations in terms of vaccine. So I would say that the 2009 H1N1 pandemic was one of the things that was a real challenge on the communications front.
How do you generate trust on the part of people who hear health risk communications?
I think the most important, two things that are really important. One is being transparent, being open with what you know, but also open with what you don't know, and being willing and able to acknowledge, here are the things that we don't know. I think the second thing is trying to look at the issue from the perspective of the public or the perspective of the patient, and think about what kinds of questions will they have, what kinds of concerns will they have, anticipate those concerns so that you can provide answers up front. And a lot of the best communications is about setting and guiding expectations.
What about chronic American health problems and the communication that goes on there? I'm thinking of smoking and obesity primarily. Those are issues that have been messaged, if you will, for decades. How is that changing, and how is that done effectively?
Well, I think obesity is a really good example, because obesity is a very tough challenge, and it's probably an issue. If you're trying to help someone lose weight, or you're trying to help people maintain healthy weight, communications is part of that recipe, but it's not the entire recipe. And so you're going to have to be able to do other things to help them. Communications is important in terms of giving them motivation, giving them information, giving them support, but it probably at the end of the day can't be the sole thing that helps people lose weight or maintain weight. And that said, I think some exciting things are happening with new communications technologies, and people are using interactive websites. They're using iPhones and smartphones as a way of being able to help people do things like motivate themselves to exercise.
Well, between how much communication is changing and how much the pharmaceutical world and medicine is changing, this sounds like a really stimulating line
right.
of work to be in. Describe your work with the Task Force for Global Health, which I understand is involved with messaging about the inactivated polio vaccine.
Yeah, right now the world's been trying to eradicate the polio virus from the face of the planet. Mm-hmm. Only one other virus has been eradicated. That was smallpox, and we're very close with polio. But the last step, the last 1%, has been a particularly difficult challenge. The original goal, I think, was to wipe polio off the planet by 2000. We haven't accomplished it, and we're in 2014. But as a part of that effort, one of the things that they have to do is they have to get 124 countries across the world that are currently using the oral vaccine, and only the oral polio vaccine, to add to their childhood schedule the injectable or inactivated vaccine. And the reason for that is, if you want to get the world free of polio, you not only have to get rid of the wild or naturally occurring viruses, you have to get rid of the viruses that are related to the vaccine. The oral vaccine uses a weakened virus.
Can you share anything of what you will be addressing in your lecture tonight?
Well, I'll be talking about some of the things I've learned when I was at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in my 14 or 12 years there, in terms of working with scientists and doctors about communication, some of the lessons I learned, some of the things that aren't so obvious until you actually sit down when you're trying to get a doctor to become a better communicator. And so I'll be highlighting some of those examples. I'll also be spending a little bit of time talking about some of the lessons I learned in terms of how we can do things better and how we can be more effective as communicators.
Hmm. Dr. Glenn Nowak is the director of the Grady College Center for Health and Risk Communication at the University of Georgia. He's speaking about health risk communication tonight here at MSU as part of the College of Communication Arts and Science Brandt Lecture Series. Nice to meet you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.